This is the Don't Talk About Your Stocks podcast, episode number 16.
Welcome to the Don't Talk About Your Stocks podcast, where we interview successful traders to find out how they evolved throughout their trading careers and what approaches are working for them now.
Today on the podcast, I have Cesar Alvarez from Alvarez Quant Trading. Cesar, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome to you, too.
Do you want to start by telling me a little about yourself?
Sure. I got a Bachelor's of Science from Electrical Engineering, Electrical Engineering Computer Science, and a Master's in Computer Science from University of Berkeley. From there, I left and got recruited by Microsoft and started Microsoft in the early 90s, working on Excel as a developer on Excel's 3, 4, and 5. After that, went to some small startups, and then I spent 9 years as the director of research at Connors Research, working for Larry Connors and developing my trading strategies then.
Cool, that's interesting. So what was it that got you into the trading research?
When I left Microsoft, I left with a small nest egg. Unfortunately, I left Microsoft a little too soon, so I didn't leave with a large nest egg. I left there and I gave some of the money to a money manager and was trying to convince my wife to let me manage some money because I always thought the stock market was an interesting puzzle to solve. And that's where my first start was, trying to figure out how would I manage my own money as opposed to letting somebody else manage it.
Oh, that's cool. That's just such a cool work history, starting at Microsoft. And
it was a great time to be working at Microsoft.
I can imagine.
When I started Excel, we had single-digit market share. By the time I left, we'd grown to over 60%. So it was really cool to see it happen.
Yeah, I always joke around that Excel is one of the only things I actually learned how to use in college.
Yeah, it's the one tool that I've used throughout all my life.
Yeah. Okay. So no experience at all when you went into work with Connors?
Before I started, no, I had some experience. So Connors, I started in 2004. So when I left in Microsoft in 96 and wanted to manage my own money, I started probably did the usual thing that most people do. I put some of my money in mutual funds and started reading lots and lots of trading books. After going, spending a year or so just reading trading books and understanding things, I moved on to William O'Neill's trading style in the late 90s, which happened to be a perfect time to be doing that kind of trading, easy way to make money. But I did learn a little bit about going into cash and things like that. And I did get hurt during the market crash of 2000, 2001. I lost money like everybody else, but I did not lose nowhere near as much money as my manager did. And that showed me one of the big importances of cash. I think that's a lot of people don't focus on having cash and saying, sometimes it's just good not to be in the market. That's definitely one of the things I learned from that. From there, I was just getting inconsistent results, from me and from the O'Neill trading. It was just not, it always felt like a mental struggle for me. And then in 2001 or so, I started doing some day trading, doing that for about 6 months and realized, that just did not fit my personality. And then around that time, I started playing with AmiBroker, which is a great software package that allows you to do some back testing. And one of the things that surprised me then was, how a lot of things I was reading just did not work out when I started back testing it. That's always, and it's still true today. I'll read things on the web and test it out, and sometimes the results are nowhere near as good as what people will claim.
Do you have any examples of that?
Do I have any recent examples of that? Nothing that pops into my head. But it's a lot of the time, it's not by, maliciously people saying, they're trying to mislead you. But often it's just the data they're using. One recent case is somebody came to me with a system which they said did great using the NASDAQ 100 stocks. The problem was they were using the current NASDAQ 100 stocks and going back, through the test frame. And that just can lead to potentially horrendous results. And the funny part about that is tomorrow I'll be having a blog post on the effects of survivorship data versus not having it and also in particular what I call pre-inclusion bias, you know, using current today's S&P 500 versus the actual historical S&P 500. And in that particular case, those results change dramatically from a system that looks decent to a system that looks bad. So it's just doing good research is hard. So I was surprised when I started doing it how much harder it is than actually programming. There are just so many more errors that you can do, and they can be so subtle that you can't catch them at times.
That's interesting. So how did you develop from there? Did you teach yourself AmiBroker?
Yeah, I taught myself AmiBroker. And then, you know, I was teaching myself AmiBroker in the early 2000s. In 2003, I took a swing trading course from Larry Karners. I even took part of the course while on vacation. That's how dedicated I was to trying to figure out the stock market. Wife wasn't completely happy about that. And from that, this is actually how I ended up meeting Larry. From that, I gave him a couple of spreadsheets. You know, I asked him after the course, going, hey, you looking for a researcher? You know, I've got no background at all, but, you know, I know how to produce spreadsheets and I'm a coder. At that time, he said he wasn't interested. About 6 months later, I shot him another email. I said, hey, you interested? He goes, no, no, thank you. 6 months later after that, I sent him another email saying, hey, you interested? He goes, no, we just hired a guy. About 6 months after that, in late 2004, he calls me up and says, hey, we're looking for somebody to help verify some test results that are really good that, you know, it seemed a little too good that we need just somebody else to check up. So it started with him as a part-time job, and within a couple months, it became a full-time job as head of research for him. And that's where I developed my research style. And I learned from him. You know, we developed lots of systems. And from Larry Connors, I learned about trading and quantifying everything. And, you know, I like the swing trading, trading time frame. And then last July is when I left Larry Connors, when I decided to go off and do my own thing. And I started my blog late last year. And just recently also just started a trading signal service. Those are things I just wanted to pursue and then need to leave Larry Connors to go do.
Cool. So I assume you are sticking to similar methodologies to what you guys wrote about it. I read a couple books that you and Larry wrote together.
Yes. From the books, yes, I'm doing mean reversion. I've got two systems that I trade that are stock mean reversion systems. I've got two stock S&P 500 rotational systems that are weekly rotational systems that I trade. Those were never published in books, or those concepts are never in books.
You say weekly rotational systems?
Yeah, weekly on the S&P 500 stocks.
Well, that's interesting. I always hear about, you know, monthly and quarterly rotational systems.
I've got weeklies that I trade on Monday or Tuesday mornings, whenever, at the open. So it's just, and then I hold them for a week. One's basically kind of a reversion to the mean-like system, and the other one's a kind of like a momentum system.
Cool.
Those have been doing, you know, this last year and this year have been really good markets for those types of systems. They've made up for the other stuff. And then I've got a 3 to 6 month trend following system using ETFs that I use. So those basically the five systems I trade.
Cool. There's a pretty wide variety you got going on there.
Right. I think systems come and go, or not system, but, you know, what's working tends to come and go. You know, there's a time for mean reversion, a time for momentum, a time for trend following, and they all don't work all at the same time. I think that's one fallacy people have. It's like, oh, I've got a system, it's going to make me money year after year with no years that it's going to, you know, underperform the S&P 500. It just doesn't happen. If it does, then you've got to worry that something's wrong.
That makes sense. Which of your systems would you say you focus on the most right now?
Right now, I've been focusing a lot on S&P 500 rotational systems, mostly because we did spend a lot of time at Connors Research looking at those kind of systems. And I've been any of my readers of my blog will know I've been doing a lot of rotational posts lately. It's just it's an interesting area. I don't see a lot on it, especially on the weekly time frame or even the monthly time frame. And one of the reasons, it's just really hard to get data for that. And it's just important to have that historical constituents data for the testing.
Yeah, it makes sense that survivorship bias pops up.
Right. it pops up and causes huge problems.
Yeah. Do you want to walk us through maybe an example of how that system works? You know, what do you do? How do you sort through the stocks? How do you rotate them?
Like I said, I can't give too many details on the system. On a high level, I'm looking for stocks that recently pulled back on the S&P 500. I'm looking at them. Yep, they're still an uptrend. You know, they're very similar to a stock mean reversion system. Those are the kind of things like that. And they just haven't popped up that had a huge pop up since that pullback. And then it's the, and then I'll buy Monday morning. And as with a lot of my research, trying to do stops in the middle of the week is just, it just doesn't work. It always, for mean reversion systems and the short, these weekly rotations, as much as I want to get stops to work, I can never seem to get stops to work without having a dramatic effect on my results. And it's just better, instead of using stops, is doing position sizing. So, have a position size such that if the stock opens down 50%, it doesn't kill you. Yeah, it hurts, but it doesn't kill your system or doesn't kill you emotionally. And it will happen. You trade long enough, a stock will open up down 50%, and there's just nothing you can do about it. And even if you had a stop, there was going to be nothing you could do about that. That's how I kind of mitigate those issues, is by just doing a position sizing that doesn't hurt me if something opens down 50%.
That's interesting. What do you base that position sizing on?
I base for myself, and this is probably what I recommend to other people, is what you can mentally handle. As much as quant trading, if people think quant trading is all the emotions are out, it's just not true. There's still lots of emotions.
Still a lot.
And they're just different ones you have to deal with, or a lot of the same ones. And for me, I do a lot of position sizing. It's just, okay, how mentally, can I handle a dollar loss or a percentage loss of my account? It's both ways. So, I may be trading, let's say, $100,000, and I think, okay, I can't handle more than a stock causing more than a 5% loss in my account. So it's like, okay, well, that means if I had a $10,000 position and it opened down 50%, that's a 5% loss. Okay, so maybe I should have maybe an $8,000 position size at most. But then also, I've discovered there's both what percentage it affects your account, a 5% loss, but also dollar losses are sometimes problems. Sometimes you have people have mental hang-ups on a dollar loss and say, I just can't lose more than $5,000. It's not that's a percentage amount. It's just sometimes there's a mental block at a percentage at a dollar amount. So it's like, okay, so you base your position sizing on that. A lot of it is basing a position size on such that you won't stop trading your plan. Because often those stocks that drop down 50% will bounce, have a big bounce back up. It's usually not best, my research has shown, it's not best to sell them right then and there. But wait for that bounce. And if you can't wait for that bounce, you're just hurting yourself. So that's how I kind of determine my position sizing is, what can I mentally handle as a dollar loss and what can I mentally handle as a percentage loss to my account?
Cool. Back to what you were saying about stops, I read your most recent blog post. I thought it was just really, really interesting how the stops hurt, and the same went for all the filters. You tried like a half dozen different filters, and just I think one out of six produced any kind of reasonable result improvement.
Right. It is sometimes really interesting. This is a joke Larry and I always would have when doing research is, he'd give me some research to do, and he'd ask me, "Well, what do you think?" And you'd say, "Oh yeah, I think this make things worse, or I think this make it better." And we always joke, "Well, we're wrong half the time." Sometimes what you obviously think will make something better. I mean, we'd be dead set. Oh, this will make the system so much better, and I come back and going, "Nope, it made the results worse," or vice versa. We'd try some wild idea, going, "Oh, this just can't work," and come back, and it's like, "Wow, it actually worked." And it was like my joke was, well, this is job security because we never know what will work or won't work. You need me to test it out. It is always funny how, I'll get people send me, test ideas and saying, "Oh, you got to try this. This will work." And I'll just like, "Yeah, we'll see. It may or may not." So it's always surprising to me. This is one of the things I like about doing research is I'm never I've never lacked for surprises. Like I said, tomorrow I'll be posting a blog post on the effects of, you know, survivorship bias data. And one of the things I looked at, it's not that, but as traded prices versus split adjusted prices. So as an example, Microsoft, if you were doing a back test a long time, you know, back to the late 90s, you said, I'm only trading it, trading stocks over $5. Well, after split adjustments, Microsoft is under $5. But in the late 90s, it was trading over $100. So, you know, you would think, okay, it makes a difference whether you're, you, what kind of pricing you're using, and you want to use Ash traded prices. Well, when I did my research, it turned out there's negligible difference between using those two type of pricing. It was one of those really surprising things to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I even tried to test, I was going to do the post last week, and I delayed it because it's like, okay, I need to think about this a little bit more. And then I decided to do a special test, which was just a test for stocks, trading a mean reversion system for stocks that are between $1 and $5. I figured, okay, this will have bigger changes because now I'm focusing on low-priced stocks. And even then, the results were basically the same. And I was really quite surprised. So it's one of those, sometimes what you think will obviously make a big difference does not. Like I said, that's why I enjoy doing this research so much.
So that would explain your, one of the things I really, really like about your blog is that you basically open it up to the readers. You know, what do you guys think is a good idea? And then you come back with results of those ideas.
Right, and that's what I like. I like the readers sending in ideas. You know, it's one thing to just do my ideas, but if I get readers to, you know, send in ideas, they'll sometimes send in things that hadn't thought about, or I thought, it's like, well, that doesn't sound interesting to me, but if I get enough people send me something, it's like, okay, well, other people think it's interesting, I might as well go try it out and see what happens, and I'll post the results, good or bad. I mean, and that's, I think it's important to show even bad results, or not bad results, or results that don't produce anything better than the baseline. Because that's also very informative.
Well, that's another thing you did that I thought was pretty cool was the most recent, the most recent was an update to that at the S&P 500 quarterly rotational you were looking at.
Right.
And the initial results of the base system were nothing that spectacular. They weren't that much better than buy and hold.
Right.
And then from there you said, okay, well, let's see what we could do to make the good system out of this. And that was a really, really cool case study, I thought.
Right. And that's what I like. You know, it's slowly building on stuff, and, you know, it's, like I said, having the readers send in suggestions, and, you know, I've got a couple of suggestions that readers have sent in that I'm going to eventually get around to. And they're good. You know, it's always more suggestions that I can deal with. It's a matter of picking which ones I like or which ones I think readers would like and which ones I think I can code up in a reasonable amount of time because, you know, it takes a long time. I've been surprised how much time it takes to do these blog posts, and a lot of it has to do, I no longer have somebody backing me up. At Connors Research, you know, if I would do research, one of the other, my researchers would verify my results. So if I would make a mistake, you know, they would catch it. Well, now there's nobody to verify my results. So I've got to write the code and then spend some days away from it, come back to it and look for any potential problems that I've, you know, any mistakes I may have made. Fortunately, so far, I haven't made any, at least that I'm aware of. Dreading the day where I have to put up a blog post saying, oops, ignore that last one because I made a big mistake and all the results are wrong. But it will happen, and it's, you know, that's the nature of the beast. That's, you know, doing research, one of the hard things is you can get numbers that make sense and you think it's all right until, you know, oops, you're accidentally looking into the future or you're doing something really weird, then the results are wrong, but it's not obvious.
Right.
And that's why it's so hard to do at times.
So you mentioned you're focusing on the S&P rotational system and you have the ETF type system. Do you focus mostly on those types of stuff? Like you don't do a lot of futures or currency type stuff?
I don't do any futures or currencies.
And is there a reason for that? That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, I guess most of the reason is at Connors Research, we never spent much time in that. I always wanted to spend some time on currencies, but we'd spend a little bit of time on it, but I could never find anything that I found interesting or interesting enough to trade. One area that I do investigate or play around with once or twice a year is options. I believe there's a huge potential edge in options. One of the reasons is the data for options is horrendously hard to get and horrendously bad.
Huh. That's interesting.
So filtering out the data to make it, filtering out the data to get it good and usable and to be able to test with it and even testing with it is hard. So I believe there's potentially big edges there. Granted, you've got to deal with, you know, all the other issues with options, with the large bid-ask spreads and things like that. So once or twice a year, I'll go do some research on that, go trade options for a little bit, trying to figure out, you know, whether my research pans out, whether it can deal with the bid-ask spreads. And, you know, that's, I consider that's one of my areas I keep going back to, hoping to find something. Like I said, the data is hard to get good and clean. Even you would think even the large, you know, data for like the queues, you know, I've had data having problems with the queues, where the data was not, did not handle the, you know, the queues were three queues at one point, then went to four queues at one point, then went back to three queues. Well, for some reason, the data I was getting from a major supplier was having problems when it went from three queues to four queues, and when it went four queues to three queues, such that during those time periods, the data was just completely garbage. And, you know, even data for the SPYs, I would discover problems with it. And there were certain times where it was like, oops, I have to ignore it in these little small week, you know, this 1 week of data, just really screwy. Another area, VXX, again, I was surprised on how hard it was to get the data clean and how much time I'd have to spend looking at it to make sure there was nothing looking screwy on it. That's the non-traditional or non-stocker ETF area that I'm always focusing on. I've got another idea that I'm mulling in my head with my trading buddy that we'll probably be testing out in the near future using UVXY and options off of that.
Cool. I guess switching gears again, When I read the books you and Connors put out on the short-term mean reversion stuff, it was, I thought it was a really good way for me to transition from, you know, I was looking at, you know, the O'Neill Cantslim stuff,
right?
And to that really helped me mentally transfer into a more systematic quant approach. It was something I never really, was never really exposed to earlier on in my career. So I thought that was really interesting. What do you think is a good way to get people involved? If someone's interested in that, what's a good place to start to get more involved in quant trading?
To get more involved in quant trading, probably the best book to get started with, I hate to be promoting our books, but it's the Short-Term Trading Strategies That Work. That one I think is a really good one because it shows just all the different ways of measuring mean reversion, and you can easily take the ideas from that book and make a strategy that works. That is definitely a good basic book, I'd say, to start getting into it. And it's very accessible to most people. There's, you know, no complicated math, nothing along those lines.
Yeah, I remember reading through that book the first time I read it. I thought, these are pretty simple systems. That makes sense. Okay. Right. And then I flipped the page and you'd see the return on it. Wow, this is really cool.
Right. And those returns, unfortunately, have come down. You know, as more and more people have done mean reversion, those returns have come down. But they're still, you know, I'm trading mean reversion systems still, and they're still making money. And do they make money as big as they did in the early 2000s? Unfortunately, no. But I believe they're still making money. They're still making money for me, I should say that. So that's a great book, I think, to start with. Then another one that I would recommend for people is Quantified Trading Systems by Howard Bandy. He's written a couple books on AmiBroker. His books are AmiBroker focused, which I believe is probably one of the better softwares out there for doing backtesting. It's a little bit difficult to use or to get started in, but once you get going, it's incredibly powerful.
Relatively inexpensive too, right?
Yeah, it's insanely cheap. I mean, now you're actually pricing it somewhat. I think it's a couple $100 now. But when I bought it in the early 2000s, it was like $79 or something like that. I just could not believe, you know, for the longest time he had it for like $99. That was just insanely cheap for what he was giving away. Now I think it's around 200 now, somewhere in that neighborhood.
I think 240 last I checked, but right in that neighborhood. And
you know, even then, it's still cheap.
Comparatively, the TradeStation platform was $100 a month.
Right, and this, in my opinion, is much. It's a much better than TradeStation. I've looked at TradeStation. We've done TradeStation, a little bit of TradeStation programming, and this is just, in my opinion, so much better, so much faster. It's got lots of flexibility in it, and you know, if you're a hardcore programmer, man, you can do a lot with it, and then some. So you know, Howard Bandy's got several books. The Quantified Trading Systems is a good one. On just another good one, how to build systems, how to evaluate them. He's got a beginning Ami Broker book also. I don't remember. I think one or two others. And then along another quantitative trading book I like is actually it's called Quantitative Trading by Ernest Chan. That one's a little bit more sophisticated. So these are kind of each book kind of gets a little bit more sophisticated than the last. Those are probably the three books you know, I'd recommend for people getting into and learning Ami Broker or a backtesting platform. Ami Broker happens to be my favorite one, you know, whether it's TradeStation or anything else. As long as you know, you can get good data into it and you can backtest your ideas. You know, to me, that's the big thing is you know, learning to test your ideas out. But that also gets into, you know, how, you know, even more so whether you want to get into quantitative trading is backing up a little bit, is understanding, is finding something that fits your personality. I think that took me a long time to understand, is, you know, finding a system or trading method. You know, even if you do quantitative trading, there's still a lot of things in it. You know, are you going to do mean reversion? Are you going to do shorting? Are you going to be doing break, you know, some sort of breakout or momentum or longer term holds or ETFs? Or, you know, like you said, Forex or anything like that. Is finding a system that matches your personality. No matter how good the system is, if it doesn't match your personality, you're going to fail. You know, it took me a while to realize that. And unfortunately, the only way I believe to figure that out is a lot of trial and error. You can't, there's no, like, okay, fill in this test and I'll tell you what system to trade. You know, I can generally point, you know, if somebody tells me they're, you know, we talk with somebody, I can generally point in general direction of what systems will probably fit their personality, but exactly what, you know what, unfortunately it's trial and error to understand, you know, what fits, you know, how much time do you want to spend on it? How much, you know, action do you want, you know, or no action do you want, you know, how much risk and do you want and things like that. It's just finding a system that works with you. And as I said earlier, a lot of people think, oh, I want to go to quant-based trading because then I don't have to worry about my emotions and anything like that. That's just, you know, like I said earlier, that's just not true. And to me, you know, the one way is I discovered this and have get around the whole emotional thing is, you know, trading can be a very solitary thing. A lot of people, you know, trade from home and that's it. And they don't talk to any other traders. I think people need to have a trading buddy. You know, I got a trading buddy, I don't know, huh? I've had my trading buddy for about 7 years or so. And I can definitely say my trading improved quite a bit once I had my trading buddy, because Steve and I, we trade similar systems. So, you know, when market's crashing and you're trading the same systems, you're both feeling the pain. And you can talk on the phone, you can both feel the pain, and you can remind yourselves, stick to the plan. You know, just stick to the plan, things will be better. And it's so much easier to do when you have somebody else to talk to than when there's nobody else to talk to and you're just staring at your screen and watching your P&L dive day after day after day. You know, as opposed to I'll call up Steve and we'll just gripe about, oh my God, you know, this is so bad. You know, when is it going to bounce? Or even gloat sometimes when the market's just on fire, your system's on fire. You have somebody to gloat and knowing, okay, don't suddenly double your position sizing. It's like, oh, I really want, you know, it's like, no, stay, you know, keep to the plan. Don't change it. You know, it's really good to have this trading buddy help keep you in check. You know, misery loves company, and it's really, you know, it's really good. He's having Steve there as my trading buddy. Actually, he's helped my trading researcher too. Just really helps out. I think people need to find somebody to be able to talk to, especially during those bad times, to make sure you stick to the plan. And another thing the trading buddy does is make you realize how much luck is involved. And by this, I mean, Steve and I trade very, very similar systems. I mean, very, very similar. And sometimes he'll call me up and goes, oh my God, did you see, aren't you in XYZ? It was just up 30% today. I'll look at my account. It's like, I didn't get XYZ. what do you mean? And it's like, what? Or vice versa. He goes, oh my God. You know, I'll call him up and say, oh God, are you an ABC? It just, you know, opened down 20%. He goes, no, I'm not an ABC. And so it's one of those things you realize there is luck involved in this. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, even though we trade very similar things, we'll sometimes, you know, we'll have 80% same stocks, but those last 20% can sometimes make a big difference in your account at the end of the year. You know, about 2 years ago, it was 2011, 2012. I think 1 year, 2011, he had a just amazing year. My year was okay. It just, he got lucky and got some really big winners. And then the following year, our luck switched where he got hit by a couple really big losers. And I missed them. So I had a pretty good year. And his year was, you know, wasn't as good as usual. And it just kind of shows you, well, sometimes it's just luck. That it's a matter of luck on how well your year ends up being.
That's cool.
And it's just, you know, it just helps to have somebody to talk to when you've got, you know, when you've got problems and keep you in check. Have a plan, you know, You know, even if you're trading from the seat of your pants, you need to have a plan. You know, everybody says this, and it's one of those things everybody says, but not everybody does. Is, you know, you got to know what you're going to do in situations. You know, as an example with Steve, you know, we all make mistakes. We all sometimes get in a position we didn't mean to get into or whatever. And my plan is, if I get in a position that I'm not supposed to be into, I just sell it. I sell it as quickly as I can get out of it. You know, that's just my plan. You know, however I got into that position, it does not matter. Just get out of my account. Steve, for the longest time, would try to trade around it. He'd all of a sudden become a day trader. I would just laugh at him. He goes, okay, let me see if I can, you know, I'm going to see if I can day trade around this position and get out of this position. It's like, Steve, you don't day trade. Just get out of the position. You know, I think finally, after years and years, I finally convinced him, okay, you're in a position that you're not supposed to be in. Just get out. So, you know, just having a plan for those things.
What do you think is the, how important is it for the trading buddy that's traded similar to you?
I think it's important. You know, is it critical? No. Is it better to have a trading buddy who trades something completely different versus no trading buddy? I say even a trading buddy would trade something completely different. Because you know what? At the end of the day, a lot of these emotions are the same. You know, we go through them. You know, having a trading buddy who trades something similar is good because you're both going through the motions at the same time. And you can kind of, you know, help keep yourself in check.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, you know, just having somebody, I think having a trading buddy is just important. Even if they're not trading the same thing. Because he trades other things that I don't trade. You know, he trades E-minis, and I don't trade E-minis. And, you know, sometimes he gets some serious pain from those. He'll be getting serious pain from those, even though my account's doing okay. So, you know, I'll talk him through that. And then recently, I was going through some serious pains on a shorting system, and he does it short. So, you know, he was talking me through that and working me through all that. So, you know, even though we weren't trading exactly the same thing, we understand trading. We understand those emotions and exactly what you want to do. I think it's one of those. It helped me a lot, and I'm sure it's helped him a lot to improve his trading, to have him there to somebody just talk to.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. My experience with that
is.
Any
more questions on my trading, on the trading buddy?
My only experience with that was that I went to a Can Slim meetup. And no one there was following canceling. They were all trying to, shoot holes in it, and that was counterproductive for me. But since then, since starting the blog, I've just been, you know, overwhelmed with people who are, you know, similar minded and have really contributed a lot to my education.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, yeah, it is important. And you know, another thing about trading that I've always. The trading buddy can help you with, or even not even help you with, is something I've also discovered. Testing is people underestimate how much drawdown or risk they can handle. you know, people will say, oh, I can handle 20%, 30% drawdown, because they look at their results and they say, well, yeah, 20, 30%, no big deal, because it was up, you know, that drawdown got made up right away. But in my experience, most people start to freak out about 10% drawdowns. My freak out point tends to be around 18% or so is where I start to really start going, ah, this is not feeling good. That's one thing, you know, people, you know, my suggestion for anybody who's getting into this is like, you know what, take any drawdown you think you can handle, you know, cut it by at least a third, because you won't be able to handle that. I mean, I know probably only two people of probably the hundreds I've met who can probably safely handle more than 30% drawdowns.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I don't even know how they can handle it. I mean, Steve, my trading buddy, is one of those guys. He's had some insane drawdowns. I think he's probably had even, I don't know how, his biggest drawdown. I mean, 30% drawdown for him is no big deal. And it's like, oh my goodness, I don't know how you're handling it.
What's a breaking point for you? Where do you go?
I'm around 18%. Around 18, 20% is where I really start to go like, oh, I really want to bail on the system, or, you know, get me out of this. That tends to be around where my breaking point tends to be. It's not necessarily for the system. It's for all my systems combined, I should say, because I keep track of them all. So I don't mind if one's going a little bit more than the other. It's when they all start to fall apart together. That tends to be where my breaking point tends to be. You know, at one point I thought it was around 25-30%. Right? Yeah. Once I got to that 20%, I realized no, I can't be up that high either. it's one of those things. You don't know what it is until you get there. And it's, you know, very few people, you know, overestimate the risk and underestimate how much they can handle. A lot of it comes down to, you know, understanding your position sizing, understanding your whatever stop mechanism you have. You know, that's where, you know, my position sizing got adjusted, because it's like, okay, I can't handle that much drawdown. So you know, that's where you do. And doing those big drawdowns, though, tends to be where either an individual, you know, even on bad stock, just a single stock, is where people want to change their plan mid-trade. And that's the worst time to change your plan. And it's even hard for a quant, because I've done it where I'll be mid-trade and I'll do the research saying, oh, okay, I can do the research right now to figure out whether it's better to, you know, stay in this position or get out. And, you know, even if the numbers say get out or stay in, it doesn't matter at that point, because you're still making an emotional decision. It's an emotional decision. You're just trying to back it up with numbers, you know, somehow back up your emotional decision with numbers. And, you know, that's something, again, that your trading buddy can kind of say, look, don't make the decision now, wait later. And my rule has now become, you know, even if I, you know, if I'm mid-trade and decide I want to change my plan, you know, sorry, you got to stick it out. And even if the research says you should change it, it's like, nope, for this one trade, you got to stick it out. And then I'll say, you know, come back and revisit 2 or 3 weeks later. And I'll often come back and revisit it 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, look at it, go, you know what? Nah, I'll just keep what I was doing. It was, you know, what I was doing is simpler. It makes just as much sense. And I know, you know, what it is. And it's been really funny how often, I mean, I would go back and say, oh, I'm going to change it. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, I'll look at it and say, no, I think I've probably only done once I can think of where I've actually gone 2 or 3 weeks later and looked at it and said, yeah, you know what? I think that is a good change to make. It's just, you know, like I said, even though we're quant traders, we're still dealing with emotions, and you know, we have to learn how to deal with them.
That's a really, really good point.
Yeah.
Based on what you've said here, I'm going to take a wild guess that you spend a great deal more time on research than you do on actually trading. Is that right?
Oh yeah. I probably spend hour or two a week doing my own personal research. I spend an hour or two on the blog, which is, you know, all research. And then, you know, at least that much a week, more than that on the week. I think about probably 2 to 4 hours a week on the blog. So as a quant trader, and this will kind of get into my biggest mistakes, a lot of my stuff's automated. So in the, you know, after the market closes, I update the stocks, I run my scans, it's, you know, it's a couple of buttons. I take my scan results, throw them into a spreadsheet, push a couple of buttons, And my trade list is set up for the next day. And then when I place my orders the night before, I push a couple more buttons, my orders are placed. That whole process probably doesn't take more than 15 minutes, 10 minutes, if that. It's all just pushing buttons. And I could probably automate it down to pushing one button, but I like being in the middle of it just to make sure nothing weird is happening. And like I said, a lot of my biggest trading errors have been, I guess, execution errors. And this is I don't know, this is sometimes painful to talk about because all errors are stupid. But mine tend to be funny stupid, I guess. So like I said, I tend to automate a lot. So I use Interactive Brokers as my broker, and they have a great little feature called a basket order. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Nah.
So basket order basically says you create a text file that has all your orders in it, and then all you do is, you know, it could have 20, 40, 100 orders in it, whatever, it doesn't matter. You just load it up to AmiBroker and then push a button and all your orders are automatically placed. And now I generate this basket order in it using Excel macros. No surprise that I'm using Excel. But this, so by the push a button in Excel, I take all my signals that I'm getting for the day and it generates this basket for me. Well, one day I accidentally had forgotten, it was probably late at night it happened, but I had not run my scans. So I accidentally placed the previous day's basket order in. So all of a sudden I put in, you know, trades for like, I don't know, 10 stocks, which were a day old. And the next day when I'm looking at this, is what the hell? Why am I getting back into this position? What? It's just like I was utterly confused. It was like, oh my goodness, it was just a royal mess to clean out of that. It was a royal pain in the ass cleanup because it was like I was like in stocks that I shouldn't have been in. I was now doubled up in certain stocks, and it was like, oh my goodness. So I was like, okay, how can I prevent that from happening? So now every day at 3 o'clock, the basket file is automatically deleted from my computer. So you know I can't accidentally put it in an old basket order. Well, of course, there's more mistakes that can happen. Well, one day I thought I'd already run all the signals. So I pushed the button that says generate the basket order. Well, of course, what did I do? I was running still the previous day's signals. So I put in the previous day's signal, kind of like doing the previous day's basket order, but same error. So now I had yet another code that I had to add to prevent from previous day's signals being added. And then the worst for me is when I actually have – I've been doing this automated basket orders for years and years and years. I don't know how long, probably 7 years. The worst case for me, and this is nothing I can do anything against other than being really meticulous and slow, is when I have to place orders by hand. So sometimes, for whatever reason, I'll be in a stock that I'm not supposed to be into, or I'll need to get out of something. I have to get out of some stock. So I actually have to go into Interactive Brokers and place the order by hand. Well, since I never do this, I cannot tell you at least half the time I screw it up. I either buy something that I meant to sell something I meant to buy, don't do enough shares of it, do too much shares of it. It's just because I do it so infrequently that you would think, okay, placing an order would be simple. And apparently it's not simple enough for me. I just dread it now. Whenever I have to go in there, you know, and place an order by hand, it's like, okay, double check it, triple check it. Am I buying it or am I supposed to be selling it? How many shares am I buying or selling? And the good part is there's a fellow friend of mine who does the same kind of thing, has everything automated, and he's the same way. We would laugh about it when we each do it because it's like, oh, yeah, I remember the last time I did that. You know, he goes, yeah, about half the time I completely screw it up. And I always have to double check after I've done it to make sure I've done that. So my errors, like I said, tend to be execution errors in a sense. Or automation errors that, you know, whenever I make a mistake, any of these automation errors, it's like, okay, how can I make sure it never happens again? because, you know, they're automation errors, so I should be able to code them away. Those are my biggest mistakes.
I mean, I'm sitting here laughing because I can think of the same type of things I do, typing in the wrong stuff, either the wrong number of shares or the wrong number or the wrong letters for the stock symbol.
Right. Yeah, that's a great one, too. When you do the wrong... because Steve will sometimes do that because he does his by hand. he'll sometimes get into the wrong one by, you know, typing in the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And that's where he had actually, I had to teach him. It's like, look, you're the wrong one. Doesn't matter how good the chart looks like, get out of it. He goes, but it looked like a perfect pullback. I don't care what it looks like. You're not supposed to be in it. Get out of it.
One of the things that I like about, that I thought was interesting about trading stocks with a quant approach, kind of like what you're talking about, is that it doesn't require the amount of capital to start that something like futures or currency does.
Right.
What do you think is a reasonable amount of money to start with for something like one of the strategies in your book?
I'd say you could probably, as long as your commissions, you know, you're getting dirt cheap commissions. Let's say in Interactive Brokers, it's a half a cent per share, you know, with a minimum $1. I mean, you could probably get away with a $10,000 account. And, you know, that would have a minimal impact on you. So, you know, that's not that much. You know, I'd probably say, you know, being safer, it'd be 20 to 25. But, you know, $10,000 account, you know, with a 10% position, you know, $1,000 position sizing, would be a reasonable way to start and, you know, start getting your feet wet. Like I said, important part is just keep those commissions under control.
Right. That's what a lot of the futures guys I talk to say absolute minimum $25,000. So to be able to, you know, which is much, right. much significantly larger than $10,000.
I mean, you could probably do less. I mean, again, it's a matter of position sizing. I mean, right. You could do $5,000, but then, you know, I still would recommend $1,000 in per position because, you know, once you get under $1,000, the commission's going to start really eating you up. But that, now you're talking 20%, you know, of your account in one position. In one stock. So if that opens down 50%, you know, that's a 10% loss right there. And that's to the point where nobody, you know, like I said, that's to the edge of most people can't handle a 10% loss in their account.
Yeah. Not to mention, you know, coming back from that's pretty difficult.
Right. But the upside is if you get one of those stocks that opens up 50 or 100%, you know, the fact that you're
out.
That makes your year. And, you know, those do happen. About, you know, once every 2 years, I'll get one of those big gap ups, which always help the account.
Cool. So the only other question I have, which is my absolute favorite question, do you have any non-trading books that you recommend that have helped you over your career?
Yes. I read a ton of books. I read just a lot of random, or not random books, but lots of books. But for trading, there's two particular type of books I really like. One is the ones that kind of show the weakness in the human mind, and the other one is randomness and luck, how much a big part they play in our lives. So on the randomness and luck, there's two books I really like. One's called The Luck Factor by Richard Weissman. And the other one's called The Drunkard's Walk, How Randomness Rules Our Lives by Leonard Moldenhoff. I'll have to send you those. But those two books, I believe people underestimate how much luck is involved in our lives. You know, people always think, okay, I did something well, it was all skill. I did something bad, you know. And there's still a lot of luck involved in our lives. You know, yes, we generate our luck, but there's still luck. And like I said, and that for me gets reemphasized with my trading buddy Steve of, you know, sometimes our good years, bad years, you know, our difference in our years is just a matter of one stock. You know, somebody got hit really poorly or somebody got a 100% winner. And that's just the big difference between our, you know, how we did. And then the other ones, like I said, the ones that show us our biases, you know, the new classic, Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman that's the new one that everybody really likes. Predictable Irrationality by Daniel Ariely. And then The Invisible Gorilla by Christopher Chabris. Those three books are good about showing us just all the biases we have as humans and how we're not as smart as we think we are, and that we're guided a lot by emotion and a lot by heuristics that aren't quite right and that can lead us astray. Those two types of books, I think, really have improved myself as a trader. And like I said, it's a lot of trading is emotion, even if you're doing quant trading, and they kind of help you. Those books help me realize, okay, let me just keep things in check. When things are going well, those are the books that you really need to know about, because things will go bad. So those are the type of books I like.
Cool. That's Thinking Fast and Slow is the only one on that list I've read, so I got my work cut out for me now.
The other books are fairly quick, easy reads. Yeah, Thinking Fast and Slow is a big book.
Yeah.
All the other ones are, if I remember correctly, are much smaller, quick, easier books to read in a week or two.
Cool. Okay. Well, that is all I had for you. Where is the best place for that people can find you online?
Right. So, if people are interested in finding more about just general research and things, my blog, Adverse Quant Trading, I post like every week and a half to 2 weeks. I'll do something there, usually something research-based that's caught my interest or something on the readers have, suggested some extension of some previous research. And so that's a good place. And the second place is TranquilityTrading.com. I've got Steve and I have now a rotational S&P 500 system there that we're selling signals for. So if people are interested in some sort of rotational system, they can go there and get more information on that.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool. Okay, well, Cesar, thank you so much for doing this, and I look forward to talking again real soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Don't Talk About Your Stocks podcast. Be sure to check out the website for more information and our trading bookstore at donttalkaboutyourstocks.com.